Hey, good evening, guys. Thank you for tuning in. We have a special guest tonight. Really excited. This is my first time having a best-selling author on the show. So, Randy Miette, he is the author of For Such a Time as This. And first question, obviously, it deals with real estate investing, which is, you know, right in my wheelhouse. But where did the title of the book come from?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me.
Yeah,
I really,
absolutely.
Really appreciate it. So yeah, the title of the book came from, it's a funny story actually. I was going back and forth with the title. We were workshopping a lot of different things, and everything's kind of salesy or, you know, real estate-y. And this is kind of not. So what happened was, I really feel like I was praying about it, and from the book of Esther in the Bible, it says that we were put in the kingdom for such a time as this. So if you read the book, in the story, it took much longer than I had expected, right, to kind of break through and say your first deal is the hardest. And one of the lessons that I learned through the process is that we have our own timing. We always think things are supposed to happen according to plan. But I was learning how to rely on God's time.
Right.
So it wasn't the way I wanted it, but for such a time as this.
I like it. I like it. And again, it almost never goes as planned.
Right.
This industry has taught me one thing, and another kind of cliche we use. I bought one of my guys a watch years ago for his 10-year with me, and on the back I had it engraved, time kills deals.
Sure.
And, you know, like sometimes the longer things drag out, the more likely problems arise,
right,
and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of things that definitely throw a wrench in the plan, or can make it a little more difficult. So
yeah, absolutely. The two biggest currencies in real estate, right? Money and time.
Yeah.
And I wound up saving money and promising a quicker timeline, but it extended longer than any of us liked. So money and time were spent, but I guess with the old can-do attitude and just not giving up, we were able to cross the finish line.
Had you ever written anything before? Did you see yourself writing a book one day?
No, I hadn't ever really seen myself writing a book. I guess I could selfishly say I thought I was a pretty good writer.
Sure.
But really, this book was born out of business journaling.
Yeah.
And I started journaling, you know, just small wins here and there, because it was trying to keep me on track. There's a lot of work that goes into building a business with no gratification up front.
Absolutely.
So,
well, it's like people see the tip of the iceberg, like the old poster of the iceberg, but iceberg is this big underneath the water, and you just see the
right.
2% of the final finished product of the
success.
Well,
you can see, you know, like Michael Jordan shooting the buzzer beater, but, you know, 1,000 jump shots every morning.
Exactly.
So
let's back up a little bit, because I want people to kind of learn a little bit about Randy.
Okay.
And I know, obviously, you have a military background. So, you know, before you bought your investment properties, you've been in the Air Force 20 plus years now, correct?
I'm coming up on 20 years, summer of next year.
Okay, so 20 years in the military. Take us through that, like, you know, full-time military.
Where
you got the inspiration to go to real estate?
I was in I'm still in the Louisiana Air National Guard. I've been full-time in the Guard for about 10 years. So I'm actually active duty, but in the Guard. I don't get stationed different places. So
okay.
It's in New Orleans, right in Belle Chasse, Calendar Field. So I signed up right after high school, and I was fine with that. You know, I mean, the military has done a lot for me. It took me all over the world, really.
Right.
It is always something to fall back on, even when I wasn't full-time. Just, I guess, instilling discipline or certain things that you pick up along the way. I had no aspirations to ever do anything other than the military.
Right.
For a very long time. And it wasn't until 2022, we were in Langley, Virginia, doing a POTUS mission. And basically, the one thing I wanted to get out of my 3.5 months in Langley, I was trying to get my golf score in the 80s. Right? Taxpayer dollars, hard at work.
Right. Right.
That was my goal.
So you're a damn good golfer then, too, huh?
I said I wanted to get my golf score in the 80s. I think my best game before I left was 92.
Okay.
I just couldn't break into that 80. But while I was there, you know, passing time in between flights or, you know, at work, I was watching YouTube videos, and I came across a video by Sam Kwok of Accelerated Banking Consultants. and it was a HELOC strategy combined with velocity banking, and moving money around in circles, avoiding interest, you're able to pay down your house and pay off your house in 5 to 7 years.
Right.
It's it. And I mean, you know as well as I do, social media can be, you know, littered with people selling snake oil, right?
Yeah, that principle, like again, you mentioned military, you mentioned discipline. Mm-hmm. With the right strategy and implementing it correctly, I've seen it work, and I've seen it also not work, because
sure.
Just like, again, a diet. I've written a diet for 100 people, 10% of them lost weight, the other 70-80% didn't follow the diet.
Right, and that's not the diet's fault.
It was not the diet's fault or the trainer's fault.
Right. So, once I saw that video and I began to do some research and look into it, it kind of sparked something inside me. And, you know, we're taught, or in my case, really wasn't taught much about money, or taught that debt is bad, right? All debt is bad.
Yep.
Credit cards are evil. You know, you live below your means, that sort of thing. And again, I never really had any aspirations outside of the military, but hey, a mortgage-free house, is who wouldn't want that?
Right? That's a damn good thing to have, especially at your young age.
Sure. So, buying into that program and seeing that there's an alternative to the pre-scripted narrative that we're supposed to live out, it just changed my way of thinking.
Yeah.
And I started to research, you know, further my financial education. Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yep.
You know, I started reading Who Not How, Gap in the Game.
That's a good book.
Yeah. So I started seeing the world through a different lens.
Yeah.
You know, things are possible, even if you didn't come from money or if you're not well-to-do, you can break through. We always hear inspirational stories, but, you know, at the beginning of it, it's your mindset that has to change.
Yeah. Well, and again, all those books you mentioned, I think, are fundamental, like the ground level. When you're a young entrepreneur, young man, young woman, whatever, you know, early on, like, we're not taught that in school.
Right.
If you grew up with, unfortunately, like I did, you know, your parents were poor, didn't understand money, they were just working, just barely make ends meet.
Right. And that was a whole generation that did that, because that's what they were taught.
Exactly. So those books I read late in life, mm-hmm. and again, it changed that mindset, changed that perspective. So, you know, getting those early on, and then with your military background. So let's talk about that HELOC program.
Sure.
Because I think that's something that is powerful, and you did it.
Right.
So if you could summarize it kind of quickly for people who may want to pay their house off quicker and put that into place and then turn around and use that HELOC maybe to buy investment property. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So the principle, like I said, velocity banking strategy tied with the HELOC. So you're pulling the equity out of your home, you can get up to 80%, right? And it's going to be a first lien HELOC, so you won't have a mortgage anymore.
Right.
But then, and this is the scary part, you take all of your money and dump it into the HELOC. Basically, you know, we took out our savings. My wife's paychecks, my paychecks, direct deposit, it's all straight into the HELOC. Mm-hmm. So now we're using the HELOC like our bank account. That is our bank account. And then over here, we live off of credit cards, which again, I was taught, right, credit cards are evil. Don't ever get into debt. But if you live off the credit card and you're paying, because you know a HELOC, the interest is calculated daily. But if you live off the credit card, you pay on day 29 before interest is collected, you pay with the HELOC, and then your check goes straight into the HELOC on day 30. You're moving your money around in circles and you're avoiding that amortized interest, which is compiled over a 30-year mortgage, right? I mean, a 30-year mortgage I don't think is even designed to ever be paid off.
Most people won't ever, because most people don't live in their house 30 years.
Right.
So your average person, 7 to 10 years, and then they're buying another house.
Right, and usually for more expensive and then just piling on to the top.
Exactly. So you and your wife, you guys are young, obviously in the military. I know you're underpaid and underappreciated. So average income there, what were you guys making that you put this principle to work and were able to pay the house off?
So my wife's a pharmacist. Mm-hmm. So she does better than I was in the military. But if we were making around 10 grand a month,
yeah.
But then you subtract house payment now you've got the HELOC payment, but front loading it with all of our savings and everything, and then just living underneath, you know, our lifestyle doesn't change, but living underneath our paycheck just like we were before, because that's one of the big questions I ask. What if you over-leverage your HELOC? Well, what if you overdrive your bank account? Right?
Right.
Same deal. So you just live within your means while, I think when we calculated it, I'm going to be saving $125,000 in interest over a 30-year amortization, maybe more.
Yeah. And so you guys just applied everything directly into the HELOC, and then you pace to pay the house off in how long?
About 3 years, a little over 3 years.
No kidding. And that's with a combined household income under $150,000.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, listen to that. Think about that. That's strong, because most people out there think that, you know, you have to make extreme sums of money to do these types of things. But it's more about the discipline and like you said, leveraging the interest and avoiding the interest.
Right.
And then now you've got a $300,000-$400,000 HELOC on the house that you can turn around and apply that for your investment strategies.
We could. That's definitely an option. Another great thing about the HELOC, you know, like a mortgage payment, you make that payment, you light that money on fire, it's gone. But a HELOC is open ended.
Mm-hmm.
So during that 10-year draw period, as much as you pay it down, you always have it sitting there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking. Like now, you on your next property, you've got that. You don't even have to use your cash necessarily if you wanted to for future purchase. So remind everybody, where was the program? What was the program that you got involved with that helped you do that?
So it's called Accelerated Banking Consultants.
Okay.
With the Kwok Brothers. They're out of Chicago.
Okay.
I've since come to know them as personal friends. And
right.
Daniel wrote the forward to my book. But so their companies, one of their companies, Accelerated Banking Consultants, that's what I originally bought into. And basically, they're just strategists. You have a coach, you do Zoom calls,
mm-hmm.
they'll put everything in a spreadsheet, they'll teach you. Can you do the strategy on your own? Absolutely. Could Randy? No, I couldn't have.
Right.
Right. So to me, it was worth it to pay into the program, make sure I was on track, make sure I got everything set up correctly.
Yeah. And then, so the next step to that, obviously, where did you get the fire that you're going to become a real estate investor?
So once that HELOC happened, and again, when you're going through a process, you don't realize how much of a mindset change, you know, or how much of a formative moment it is. But like I said, I started reading books, started looking at the world differently, and then it wasn't until after the HELOC was closed and I'm on track, you know, following the program, that I found out that they actually got their start real estate investing. Two brothers, they're South Korean immigrants.
Really?
Their dad came over when they were children. As he was a pastor. They grew up poor. You know, they were in college, on Christian college, on scholarship, and they stumbled into a real estate class. And I think they were like 19 and 21 or something, and they started buying investment properties. You know, and they built a huge portfolio, and now they own or invest in 8+ businesses. I mean, super successful.
Yeah.
And they started at a very young age. So I found the next video on YouTube, finding out that they got their start in real estate, and he started breaking down how to invest in properties, and then he showed, you know, he had a book as well. So I bought the book, and even then, I was just starting to get into reading books, and I devoured it. I'm telling you, I read it. It's called 0 to 75 Units in 1 Year.
Really? Okay.
So they bought 75 doors in under, I think it was actually even more than 75 in a year. Once they got their start. So it took them 3 years to get to that point.
Sure.
That's 3 years of building a business, learning a business, making offers. I mean, you're looking at, you know, Korean 19 and 20 year olds, 21 year olds making offers on properties, you know, people laughing about the door. But they had to get creative. They did a lot of seller financing when they were young.
Right.
Because no credit, no banks are going to touch them.
Might not have even had the right visa status to even go get a bank loan. Because I know that's a common issue we run into with some. We do a lot of foreign national or different I-10 and different
mm-hmm.
resident alien, different type of products.
Yeah, and they came over as children. I'm really not sure at that stage of the game, but yeah.
Because that can even be a hurdle. I've done loans, guys with great credit, even file taxes, but because of their visa status, they can't get a normal Fannie Mae loan.
Sure.
So that's amazing. 75 properties. Now, like you mentioned, it was three years or so build up to get to that.
Right.
And I think that's where most people lose track. And
Absolutely.
Most people can't keep the momentum. They can't keep, like you talked about being from the military, that daily discipline. 3 years, I mean, you look at it, it's really not a long time.
Right.
But most people can't go 3 years grinding without immediate results.
Without a payoff.
And especially today's world, everything's immediate gratification.
I mean, instant.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, social media, likes, all that. You know, the 7 second attention span. That goes back to immediate gratification.
Right.
Most people can't even sit and read a book anymore.
Yeah, you're right.
So, you know, so that's where I think, like, to put in 3 years of labor to get there, you know, people need to see what that takes. And so I think people need to write that book down.
And yeah, then, 0 to 75 units in 1 year. It's Daniel Clark.
Yeah. And then what's the real estate program that you joined with them?
So it's called Area Accelerated Real Estate Academy.
Okay.
So they have ABC Accelerated Banking Consultants, and now it's Accelerated Real Estate Academy.
Okay.
So yeah, that was the next step of the process. Once I got the HELOC under control, found out they were doing real estate, and I was sold immediately. You know, I knew by then this wasn't a scam.
Right?
I still have yet to meet them in person, but I'm familiar with their business, and I know I'm not getting ripped off.
Well, you've already made your money back with your first investment property that
yeah.
you did. So obviously it works.
Yeah. So I booked the onboarding call, and I had my wife sit next to me, and it's not a cheap program. You know, it's not as expensive as some of the other ones that are out there, but it's a lot of money, especially for, you know, now we're on the track to financial freedom. Do we really want to leverage our HELOC for this? But like I said, I was sold. I'm that high A, you know, super motivated.
Right.
When I see it, I gotta go get it. My wife needed a little more convincing. You know, we had about a 2 week period of back and forth, and she really wasn't sold. Even the morning that I was gonna have a follow up call to decide whether I was gonna join or not. So she's off on her way to work, and I called her. I had to call at like 9:15. I was like, look, babe, I gotta tell him something. I guess I'm gonna ask for more time. She's like, I just really don't have peace about it. I was like, well, do me a favor and just pray on your way to work. And she said, okay. So she hung up, and I get a phone call back in like 2 minutes. Right after we hung up the phone, she started praying. A car passed her, and it said, to God be the glory. And she was like, you know, I feel like you're going to do this, and it's going to be for God's glory. So go ahead.
Now, that's a chapter in the book.
That's chapter two, yeah.
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 Right when you said it, I was like, I don't remember saying it. Yeah. So let's talk about that. Obviously, you guys are very devout in your religion, in your faith. So, you know, you guys really, obviously something spoke to you and changed her mind.
Changed her mind, yeah.
To go ahead and take that leap of faith to spend that money that maybe, you know, a chunk of money to get into a real estate investing school or academy program. So you get into the academy, the program with them, and what did that teach you, and where was the kind of the aha moment that you knew, like, this is the right place? And then obviously fast forward, you bought a multi-unit apartment complex.
Yeah, so when I got in, you know, when you first join a program like that, there's modules and they do weekly calls, and you listen to people throw these terms around. And if you're not familiar with, you know, real estate, which I no background in real estate, no background in business, you know, it's like drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah, first. I mean, your whole background was Air Force. You were in the military.
Military, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I was super motivated. So I got to work right away. And I knew if for it to work, I had to work, right? Everything works if you do.
Yeah.
So I just started applying what they would teach me. And I started reaching out to people, started making calls. I did my admin stuff. I got my business strategy put together, opened up my LLC. I mean, I was even going a little too fast, like making some mistakes here and there, nothing that couldn't be fixed. But one thing I started to learn, the motivation's great, right? The motivation will get you up and go. But like you were saying before, it's the discipline.
Yeah, motivation wears off.
Motivation wears off big time. Almost like it'll spark a fire.
Yeah.
But unless you put big logs, you know, which is the discipline, it'll wear off.
Well, and one thing you said, you were quick to act.
Right.
Maybe too. But one of the things, and I tell my wife this all the time, because my wife, probably like your wife, she sometimes is more the thinker and kind of less to jump and just into something.
Right.
But one, and I'm trying to remember, but it was from military generals, and they talked about, it was in one of the books I'd read years ago, but it talked about sometimes you just have to make a decision and stick to it. It may not always be the right decision, but sometimes what makes a good general, what makes a good whatever, a good leader, is the fact that they make decisions
right
quickly. Whether, you know, you don't always know, hindsight's always 20/20.
Right.
You know, that's the thing. Sure. But that came from a military general, and it was like they talked about some of the most effective generals were just because they made the decisions on a quick moment, and they went forward with full confidence.
Absolutely. And you need to gather, you know, obviously you need the knowledge, you need to gather the information, but all the knowledge in the world without action is useless, right? So we went, you know, I went ahead, and like I was saying, the motivation, but it was the discipline that had to keep it going, and really just absorbing everything from the program and being around the like-minded individuals and being around people and seeing people. It works, you know. The strategy works, the information we're getting is good. It's doable.
Well, and again, like, you're the sum of the people around you, and so being in that group with a lot of like-minded successful real estate investors. Yeah, you mentioned at one of the recent conferences, you actually got to speak at one of the conferences, didn't you?
I did, yeah, just this weekend. I came back from Chicago, so now I'm the successful student, right? Well, one of. So I got to get up and share my story, and it was a lot less about the numbers of my deal or, you know, who I called or what I did, and it was a lot more about the mindset it takes to get there.
Yeah.
You know, the reason people fail in this business is not because they don't know how to underwrite a deal. It's because they don't have the mindset to put to push through. And another thing that I did from the beginning, which was right, was I told everybody exactly what I was doing. You know, I've noticed that the people that tend to fail, they'll keep it private in the beginning because they want to fail privately.
Right.
Instead of failing publicly.
Oh, yeah. You know what's funny? I used to, when I was in bodybuilding, and when I would get ready to compete, I would call the show promoter. I would tell people that I, you know, worked out, trained with, oh, I'm doing this show on this date, and then it was real. Because now I'm a fail publicly, you know, because I told the show promoter, oh, I'm coming to do your show. I told my training partners, my, you know, my nutrition coach, like, we're doing this, and so it was that same kind of thing, because, you know, when you're older, you don't really have a boss. You don't have anyone to hold you accountable.
Right.
I mean, if you don't buy the apartment complex, the only person that you hurt is you.
Right.
You know, so like that, I like that, because I would do the same thing if it was something I wanted to do and there's no real, you know, like mom or dad telling you or making you go to practice every day. So it held me accountable by just doing those types of things.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like working out in the morning, you know, like I could tell you I'll go work out at 6 a.m, but if we're going to meet at the gym at 6 a.m, now I'm getting out of bed.
Right. Yeah.
I could talk myself out of it, but
yeah, if you don't show up, now you stood me up.
Right.
And I got up at 5 a.m. to be there.
Yeah.
So it is funny how it's easy to roll back to bed, but if your workout partner's meeting you at 5:30 or 6 a.m, you're there.
Yeah.
90% of the time, you're not going to stand up your workout partner. Where,
yeah, so,
where are you going to hear it?
Yeah, so that's what I did. I was loud and proud about it, you know.
Good.
I was publicly telling people. And another thing I did, I spoke in absolutes, right? I didn't say, I'm getting into real estate or I want to buy an apartment building.
Right.
I would tell people, yeah, I'm a real estate investor. You know, I'm raising capital. I'm going to buy 50 doors in the next year or whatever the case may be. Or I'm going after this size apartment building.
No, speaking things into existence is real.
Absolutely.
And the other day, one of my coaches caught me saying something, and I said, yeah, I'm meeting with this recruit, and he should be signing up. He goes, what do you mean he should be?
Right.
And I was like, yeah, what am I doing? I teach this. And he caught me off guard. He goes, you mean he is signing up, right? I said, yeah, you're right. He is signing up.
Yeah.
But like, speaking in those absolutes is key. I'm teaching my kids that. My little boy is 12, and it was funny. He came to me this week. He goes, Dad, you remember, he's a wide receiver. He goes, you remember how you were saying about that jet sweep that I used to run last year? He goes, you manifested it. He said, Coach had me running a jet sweep this week in practice. Yeah. You know, like, my kids get it. Like, right. I'm teaching them that stuff at an early age because it really is. It works.
Yeah, and kids get it better than we do because they don't have the years of why this isn't going to work.
Yeah, there's no negativity built up. They don't have self-doubt yet.
Right.
Yeah, so it's great. So, you come from the military. You've now paid your house down with the HELOC. Let's talk about what you did and what inspired the book. So, you know, you've been in this real estate investing group now with the how does he say it? Is it Kwok? Kwok?
Kwok.
Kwok
Brothers.
The
Kwok
Brothers.
K-W-A-K.
Okay. So you're with the Kwok Brothers and you're in their academy. Now, what was it that you had to do to acquire this first property? Because I think that's the hardest part. And that's where I think, like, I watch Grant and he's brilliant. I watch a lot of these things. And these guys, they talk very figuratively on social media. Mm-hmm. But then there's no strategy. You know, and so, oh, I've got 2,000 doors. But how did you get the first door?
Right.
Because that's the hardest. Just like I think, like, if, you know, making the first $1 million is the hardest. You know, what was it that you had to do to get to a point, and what did they show you to where? And your first door was, I mean, it was a home run. I mean, it was a 10-unit apartment complex, essentially.
Right. So, yeah, it was a few things. Like, number one, avoid shiny object syndrome, right? Stick to the process. If you have your business strategy, you know what you're looking for. And that's what I did. And at one point, I learned to trust the process because the one that I closed, that wasn't my first deal. That's the first deal I closed. But I had 30 units on the contract that fell through. I had to back up. I had, you know, I negotiated multiple deals. I met with multiple sellers. You know, I put in offers and I was doing all these things. But my focus had been on closing my first deal.
Yeah.
And at some point, I learned my focus was in the wrong place. And it was right after, I believe, that 30 unit fell through. I went up to Chicago and I met with Daniel, my mentor. He does he calls it a decade in a day. You go up there for the weekend. And he laid out the acquisition process on the board for me.
Okay.
And it was like, if you're going to close one deal, you know, you reverse engineer. If you close one, you're going to have 2 to 3 under contract, which means you negotiated 5 to 7, which means you made offers on 15. Right, which means you cold called, or you know, you had 50 sellers say they're willing to sell, and you cold called 100.
It's like the sales funnel we preached.
Exactly. Yeah, and I remember, and again, I'm not from a business background, so I'm watching him draw this on the board, and it's like my whole, it was like everything, like I had seen in black and white, and all of a sudden it was coming in color.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm focusing on closing the deal when I should be focusing on the process, because if you get the process down, the deals are a byproduct. Mm-hmm.
You bought a 10-unit, spoiler alert,
yeah.
You bought a 10-unit apartment complex. Where did you get the down payment funds?
So I raised that capital. And that was one of the things, I'd actually had success early on before I had a deal. I was able to raise capital. And the first time I spoke at a mastermind was on that. And that's not nearly as hard as people build it up to be.
Yeah.
Right. I had thought, that's one of the reasons, a big draw for me to join the program was to learn how to raise capital.
Right. Because to me, that's one of the hardest things for most people. So what are, like, if you could give 2 or 3 tips, you know, to raising capital?
Well,
because that, for my clientele, average, middle income, lower income, like getting 10, 20, 25% down is the barrier of entry that prevents most people from ever buying that first investment property.
Right. So, and we kind of touched on it already, but unbeknownst to me, I had already laid the groundwork of raising capital because I was telling everybody what I was doing.
Yeah.
So everybody, who's going to invest in me if they don't know what I'm trying to do?
Sure.
So I'm spreading the word. I'm telling them that I'm raising money. And every time I said it, again, speaking in absolutes, I was building confidence. That confidence was exuding to who was listening, right? Because I have to believe in myself before they can believe in me.
Of course.
When somebody's giving you capital for an apartment, it's usually very rarely about the building or about the area. I mean, obviously they look at
the
numbers.
They're investing in you.
They're investing in you,
yep.
Right? It's like a marriage. So building that confidence, spreading the word. And one thing that, that worked really well for me was I would never come out and ask directly for money, and that's what everybody's scared of, everybody's afraid of doing. I would say things like, well, I'm raising money for this deal. Do you know anybody that might be interested? And that kind of creates like a, well, I might be interested, you know, what's wrong with me? And once you start doing that, then it's as simple, you know, you picture in your mind like boardroom, meetings, briefcase, and this is how you raise capital, slideshow, pitch deck. My first $130K came from a conversation with a friend.
Wow.
It was just, hey man, I'm looking at this deal. It's like, oh, well, I just sold a house. I have some money. How much do you need? And I actually wound up never using that $130K. That deal, you know, once we looked into it, we wound up not pursuing it. But now we started talking, and he was kind of all over the place. Like, well, hey, how about we buy this one and flip it? Like, well, I'm not a fix and flipper. I'm a buy and hold. Like, well, what if we did this? What if we did that? And nothing against him. Our strategies just didn't align.
Yeah.
So even though you're asking for money, you're qualifying them as much as they're qualifying you. Because like we said, it's a marriage. So what happens when we buy a $6 million property and find out we're not right for each other?
Money can break up a relationship real quick.
Real quick.
Yeah, I always say a business partnership, it's a marriage without the physical attraction and without love. So it's got, it's, there's definitely got to be that, that business connection and that trust. And again, and then the numbers need to make sense. But and you got to pull your equal share. Yeah, that's what I've seen with, you know, business partnerships. So, so you got, obviously you got an investor that, that went in on this first deal with you.
Yeah, so I raised $250 for this deal. The original price was $1.625 million was listed. I caught it the day it was listed, and it was being sold as a portfolio, 18 units total. It was two different buildings. They're both in New Orleans, 110 unit, 118 unit. And my first call to the broker, I really only wanted the 10.
Yeah.
But he said he didn't want to split it up. It was being sold as a portfolio. So be it. So we entered the deal. And I made an offer at 1.5. It was listed for 1.625. And then he comes back and he split the difference, right? His counter offer was right in the middle. And I had literally, maybe 2 weeks before this happened, I read Chris Voss's book.
Never Split the Difference.
Yeah.
It's a great book.
Great book. If you're in any business of any, even if you're going to buy a car, read the book before you go.
100%.
So he comes back, he splits the difference, and I sent an email to the broker and I said, listen, I really appreciate the offer or the counter offer. I said, I think it's fair. I think it's a good price. I definitely think the building's worth that, but I can't do it. I resubmit my offer 1.5, and then I waited. So it was like 24 of the longest hours I waited. And then I get the call back, and he wanted to shorten the DD period, which we wound up extending anyway, but he agreed to the price.
Nice. So you're under contract, and it's a total of 18 units?
It was 18 units.
10 and 8. And so the two buildings, but I remember because reading through the book, and then you telling me
that
things didn't go as planned.
No, of course not. So there were a few pitfalls from the beginning. The DD period we had to extend because it was right in the middle of Mardi Gras. That was one.
New Orleans don't work there.
Yeah. So I literally called. I'm like, how do you want me to spread? I can't get anybody on the phone. You know. So we're searching for insurance. We know the insurance.
Oh, insurance is tough lately in Louisiana.
And through this part of the process, I really learned the value of a good team.
Yes.
And having a team in place. And can you buy a 10-unit apartment building on your own? Yeah, maybe, right? Or 18 units. I couldn't, and most people can't. I don't think you should, right?
No, I have great lenders, title company, insurance agents, appraisers, inspectors, like, and I'll tell you, I always hate when I get someone who's not savvy and doesn't have a team, but they want to pick the title and they want to pick the, but they've never used them before.
Right.
Where versus like if we use my team, it's going to go real smooth.
Right.
And it's going to run a lot better. So the team is huge on a real estate deal like that.
Yeah, the team's big. And that's what I learned from the program. He teaches us to, you know, you make the calls, you're vetting your team, and you want to work with the best. Mm-hmm. But how do you attract the best? By presenting yourself as the best, right? So there's lots of things that we can do to be the best without ever having done a deal, without having a huge portfolio, without being a Grant Cardone, and, you know, replying to emails, showing up professionally. I mean, you see, I like to dress nice. I have my little briefcase.
Yep.
I present myself as somebody with a $1,000 portfolio, even though it's my first deal.
Absolutely.
Because professionalism is going to take you 99% of the way.
Yeah, see, it goes back to the military. Why is everything in line? The buttons, belt buckle. You know, like when you make your bed in the morning, like it's how you present yourself, how you carry yourself. You know, people, I'm sorry, it could be politically incorrect or not, but people judge a book by its cover.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good cover.
Good cover.
On this one, by
right? Good cover.
You know, again, I'm guilty of it. I've had people walk into my office for an interview, job interview.
Mm-hmm.
Sloppy, shirt's crooked, buttons are uneven, there's stain on the shirt. I've already, unless this guy just blows me away with the interview, I've already pretty much written that guy off.
Right, and even if he does, but he's starting from behind.
He's still got to really dazzle me.
Yeah.
And like, you know, one guy showed up for an interview in like a Garfield I Hate Monday shirt. You know, like, come on, man, are you serious?
Like, so you know, we work on Mondays.
Yeah. And I'm a big proponent of, I fucking want every day to be Monday because I have so much to do. I need the whole week.
Right.
Yeah, like everybody, thank God it's Friday. Aren't you excited for the weekend? I'm like, no, I got way too much to do. And I'm going to be here till 8:00 tonight on Friday. You know, like, I'm not that guy like running out the door like a kid when the school bell goes off. Yeah, so like you got, like you said, look the friggin' part.
Yeah.
Show up. Hey, answer your emails. Like, dude, that is huge. Responding, picking up quick, responding. Like, these are little things, but they're paramount in business.
Yeah, it's, you know, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Yep.
And that's why that first impression or that presenting yourself that way, it goes miles.
Really. Yep. No, I love that. I've told my kids that quote.
Yeah.
I've literally used that to discipline them about cleaning their bathroom and picking up their dirty dishes. I'm like, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Right.
And, oh, no, is that, I'm like, nope. It's it, like keeping their cars clean. You know, my teenagers now, they got cars.
Yeah.
You know, keeping your car clean.
My kids are never going to be teenagers. I got a 4-year-old and a 6-month-old. They're going to stay that way forever.
Right. Yeah. Hang on to those moments. But so you've got the deal now. You're putting a deal together. You're meeting with banks. And
right. So that's where we really started hitting the roadblocks. Again, this is my first deal. Trying to get approved for a $1.5 million deal.
Right.
Even with the capital. So my limited partner in this deal was a debt investor only, which is great. You know, it's, some of them will take the equity out of the deal. This one preferred not to. But that meant he couldn't be underwritten on the deal. So now they're just underwriting me.
Yeah.
Not only were they just underwriting me, but some of the banks actually looked at that as a second lien position debt and holding that against my DSCR.
Ah.
So I'm getting a little technical here, but
yeah.
So in other words, depending on which bank I went to, I was getting denied for one reason or another. And
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that it mostly came down to no experience.
Yeah, no experience. And then, you know, your military income is decent, but not enough for $1.5-2 million property. And they're looking at that as a high risk.
Sure. So we wound up actually, the seller was gracious for the most part. Oh, well, he was, because we extended multiple times. This deal's dragging out, just me trying to get funded. He could have declined an extension at any point in the way.
Oh, yeah, kept your deposit.
And sure. And then eventually he started charging me for an extension, which was his right to do so.
Sure.
You know? So I made a calculated decision, you know, like akin to sitting at the poker table and losing money. I wasn't gonna be pot committed, you know, so I wound up letting the contract default. And I was out of my EMD, plus I'd already paid for appraisals and surveys. So
yeah.
I was out 42K.
That's a hit,
right? 42K that I didn't have. But I wasn't gonna put that on my investor. So we had passed the DD period, contracted, defaulted, and all of this is going on while I'm in the hospital having my son. Right, so I'm answering emails and talking on the phone while I'm trying to rock a newborn.
Your wife's getting aggravated with you because you're not present.
Yeah. Well, trying to be as present as I could, but you know, it's like, and even when my son was born, I mean, he's fine now, but they took him to the NICU right away for like respiratory help.
Oh, wow.
So, and he stayed a couple days and we all went home together. But you know where your mind is. I mean, you got a kid in the NICU, you got a deal falling apart over here, and you got a wife to take care of.
That's a tough weekend.
Right. So we go about 2 weeks after the contract defaults, and my headspace at that point, I mean, this is failure. This is what failure looks like, right? This is where people give up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember putting in a call to my coach and even talking to my brother, and I was like, I'm actually weirdly okay with this. Like, it's not the best outcome, but look at what I learned, and I'm not putting any of the money on my limited partner, but we just got to get back to work.
Yeah.
And while I'm in that space, I get a call. I actually got approved.
Nice.
So it was like 6th or 7th bank. I get approved. So now I have to call the broker back and call the seller back and try and re-enter the deal after he's already taken my EMD and put it in his bank.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, and that's again, too, like not all banks, not all lenders are created equal. And having a team.
Having a team.
You know, it is key. I mean, having that right lender that can do that deal for a first-time investor. So,
and I had great mortgage brokers working on my behalf too. And I know you're a mortgage broker. And I'm sorry, you know, obviously business with you.
We'll get the next one.
Yeah, but I had a great mortgage broker because even when I was in the hospital dealing with all this stuff, he was out there applying at banks without me even knowing at that point, that the deal's on life support.
That's our job. That's what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And
having the best team in place in every single facet of the deal going through. So I wound up getting approved, and I could call the seller back. He didn't want to give back the EMD at first. We went back and forth over the course of 5 days negotiating, trying to get back in. Basically, it came down to, I understand why you don't trust me at this point, but I have a letter of commitment from the bank.
Yeah.
Right? That's like as solid as you can get without having the funds deposit. I have a letter of commitment from the bank, and I'm your quickest way out of this.
Right.
Now, I guess he was already negotiating on the 8 unit, and he wound up separating the deal from me.
Yeah.
For me, excuse me. And from the beginning, I really only wanted the 10 units.
So you got the 10 you wanted originally anyway.
Yeah. Perfect. And it all kind of happened in God's timing, right?
And he was gracious enough, he gave you your deposit.
He gave me the deposit back.
That's nice. That's a good, there's some good people out there in the business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I credited, not taking away anything from him, but through every step of the way, even getting denied by banks and everything, as long as it stretched out, I sent the emails, I made the calls, I kept them in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it was 30 days and all of a sudden they get a call like, hey, I need another 30 days.
No, it's you. Right. Communication is everything. Everything in this business.
Sure. So we were able to re-enter the deal for the agreed upon price, but because it was only a 10 unit, I was able to go down with more money. The appraisal was great. I wound up getting about $400,000 in equity at closing.
Wow.
So, and the cash flows immediately, and I actually had my dad managing it for me.
Really?
Yeah, him and I are doing it together, but I had my dad managing it.
Was he retired?
So he's a pastor.
Okay.
And he has a lot of time on his hands during the week, and he has a background in construction.
Oh, that's
and
perfect.
Carpentry, right, things like that, and he knows the circle, right? He knows who to call.
Yeah.
To get some things, you know, once we get into the building, it was a little bit deferred maintenance here and there. There's things you got to do, you know, it's 10 units. Toilets clogged, you know, that last hurricane that came through got a little bit of roof damage, but it's now the fun stuff begins, right?
So, how long have you had the property now?
So, I closed in July.
Okay, so yeah, so you're in your
first 6 months.
So, I mean, that's impressive. And back up, when did you get into the real estate course that you had taken?
So I joined the real estate course in March of 2023.
23. So basically just over a year.
Year and some change.
Of taking the courses.
Right.
Learning the principles, applying the discipline and putting in the research and taking the classes. You know, really understand. So it took you a year and you bought a 10 unit apartment complex in a year's time, basically.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that invest in the program. And the program's great, the program works, mm-hmm. right? We know. If you would have known me in March of 2022, before my HELOC experience, different Randy, right? The principles work, but throughout that year, I saw people dropping off the Zoom calls, right? They were showing up, and now they're not there. you see people come, and I went from being the new kid in the class to now I'm one of the veterans by attrition.
Yeah.
You know, but the people who have stuck around, the people that apply the process, you know, the coaches are there. If I have any questions about these deals, I can pick up the phone and call them.
Right.
Right.
Well, and like you said, being around the right people.
Being around the right
huge.
People.
We're not trying to sell this course. You know, we're trying to sell this book. Keep him on that best-selling author list. So you've been in the course a year. You buy your first property. And then, you know, you've done so well that now they've even asked you to come as a basically like a rookie sensation, like speak on stage of the successes you had. Right out, yeah. I mean, you know, your first property, right. And now you're getting ready to negotiate another one. I think you mentioned, huh?
Yeah, I've actually. So I've partnered with another person in the program on this particular deal. We have an offer in pending on a 40 unit. We're about to submit an offer on a 51 unit.
Wow. And so 40 pending and another 51.
Another
so
51.
You could be at 100 units in a year.
We could be. And just from this weekend, you know, I was talking to people with seemingly deep pockets, people who are basically, they're like bringing a deal, you know?
Yeah.
They've seen me, they've gotten the book, you know, they believe in me enough. As long as the numbers work, bring me the deal. So
right.
I have funding for as many deals as I can handle at the moment.
Well, you had mentioned, I mean, someone mentioned that they had a $20 million line, basically, that if
access
you have a deal that makes sense, you know, so that's where I think. And that's why I was excited to have you on, because like steps 1, 2, and 3, you know, like you see Grant, they talk about these $10 and $20 million deals.
Sure.
But there's never the, how do you get to that $20 million, you know? And so that's why I think this is so key, is because, you know, you're at step 1, you got your 10 unit complex. You're in this group now, this real estate investing group, and now 40 unit deal coming through. And remember, you're not a guy that makes $1 million a year that can just go plop down $500,000, $2 million on these projects out of your pocket.
Right.
I mean, you were coming from, you know, making 60, 80 grand a year in the military to buying a 10 unit now under contract on a 40 unit. Just if, even if the 50 unit doesn't, I mean, if you got 50 freaking units in a period of 2 years, that's incredible.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, and again, it's just the process. So, and that was another big deal about this weekend in Chicago, and just the part of the coaching that's really speaking to me is focusing on the process. So I decided, and I even kind of publicly pledged to the group that by the next mastermind next year, this time next year, like I no longer, my goal no longer is unit count or cash flow. My goal is to have my business predictable. I want to know, I want to be able to keep the metrics so I can manipulate the metrics. You know, if I put in this many offers, I want to have my acquisition funnel like a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
And I want to be predictable enough that I can excel. And then at that point, I want to start having as many mentees as I have mentors.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that's what I was going to say too. Let's say somebody watching, they can't afford the program.
Mm-hmm.
Could they DM you? And you, like you said, as a mentee, and say, I can help you.
I'm always open to that. This, you probably know as well as I do, there's only so many people that you can talk about real estate to that care, right? So
yeah.
If you want to talk about real estate, if you have any questions, you know, you're interested, the book's available, and you can just go straight to my website. It's randymillette.com.
Yeah.
My email is randy@randymillette.com. So, yeah, reach out. Absolutely. We can definitely talk. Maybe we can partner together, you know?
All right. Yeah.
There's no fun reaching the mountaintop if you're there by yourself. Right?
Yes, it's lonely up there.
It's lonely up there, right? I want to bring as many people with me as possible.
No, that's huge. And so, you know, there was a part of the book too I thought was really interesting. It was basically, I'm trying to remember the name of the chapter, but it was basically not every deal is a good deal. And there was an older lady that I think you could have stole this property, but the morality of it didn't sit right with you. And it kind of spoke to me about your character. Like, you know, she's undercharging the rent. She's had tenants for years. Like, she's just that sweet little old lady landlord. And you actually coached her and, you know, helped her and her son instead of, you know, just swindling that deal out.
Right. So it was, it was just a 6 unit. It came about from cold calling. She's, like you said, a sweet old lady. I think she said her dad bought the building when she was like 7, probably for less than our cell phone today, right? And it was in a great part of town. Like, the land was getting a piece of property in this part of town. It was in Bucktown. It's worth it. So when her son found out, because it was a cold call, and when her son found out, he flew in from Houston for my meeting, because he assumed I was like BlackRock coming in to steamroller, right?
And BlackRock would have.
BlackRock would have, right. So he's like, yeah, I figured you were going to knock down the place and build a multi-million dollar home. Well, I told him, you know, we just had the conversation, and at that point of the story, really, I'm learning to value the relationships and to offer value, yeah, even if there's nothing coming back in return.
Absolutely.
Right. So, yeah, she lived in one unit, rented out the other five.
Oh, so she still lived there?
She still lived there.
Oh, wow.
Rented out the other five. And basically, I told her, if I buy this building, I got to kick out everybody. Like,
right,
they were so below market value. And these are all sweet, mm-hmm, old people who have been there for years, you know?
Yeah.
So I said, over the next few years, you need to start incrementally raising rents so you can bring it to market at a fair price. If you're still interested in selling, you know, call me then.
Yeah.
And they thanked me, sincerely thanked me for the advice, you know? When people hear the word real estate investor, they assume one thing.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not what I want to be. I couldn't be that.
No, you know, that was an actual exercise. Rene Rodriguez, one of my coaches, he did that in our seminar. He said, I want one word when I say this next phrase, and you tell me what comes to mind. And he says, used car salesman. And, you know, all the terms were negative.
Right.
And you know, then he told a story. He goes, but if you connect a story to it, and he tells a story how a used car salesman, when his parents immigrated to the country, there was one guy that helped his grandfather get a car so he could get to and from work, and how this one used car salesman changed the course of their whole family's life. And so it's interesting how, like, you can shift that mindset of a real estate investor.
Right.
You know, because they could tell a story, oh, well, actually, there was a real estate investor, and he turned down buying our property, and instead he showed us how to double or triple the value of it over the next 5 years, and then he'll buy it from us in five years for double what he could have bought.
What I could have,
you know, like, so.
I didn't even realize that until you said it. Now I need to call him back.
it's about doing the right thing and teaching people, educating people, and it does come back. You know, I think it's one of those that, you know, those good karma moments, they come back to you.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they come back to you tenfold. You know,
absolutely.
So.
Yeah, I definitely believe that, and I wouldn't be able to, even if I wind up steamrolling everybody and get what I wanted, for what? I mean, gap in the game, right? We talked about that already.
Yeah.
Gap in the game, and 10x is easier than 2x. Like, what good is your success if you're the only one who can enjoy it?
Right, yeah, and if you got it the wrong way.
If you got it the wrong way.
Yeah, there's just like that guy, he didn't have to give you that deposit back.
That's right.
You know, like, kudos to him. I mean, that speaks volumes on his character, too, because He could have easily kept that 40, 50 grand, and that's a good property sold to someone else.
Right.
You know, so that's, like I said, I think, but at the end of the day, the people who do those right things, generally, you know, good things come to them. So.
Absolutely.
So where can people find the book?
So the book launched yesterday on Amazon.
Nice.
So it's on Amazon for such a time as this. There's quite a few books with that title. So if you type in my name, Randy Millett, for such time as this, and it's also available on my website, randymillett.com.
Yeah, and it's Millett with two L's.
Two L's. Yeah.
So, and is there an audiobook?
There is no audiobook yet. There's an EPUB's going to be coming out in about a month and a half.
Okay.
We're working on.
That's the digital version, like
a download? Like a Kindle.
Okay. Yeah.
The digital EPUB version. So right now we have the hardcover and the paperback.
Yep.
That you can order. The EPUB will be coming out. And I haven't decided if I want to do an audiobook yet. I think I need to work on my accent first.
No, dude. I will tell you to narrate your own book.
Yeah.
I do a lot of audiobooks. I'm on the road constantly.
Right.
Or I'm in the gym. And so I'll get a book every week or two between car rides and gym workouts. Like, that's when I absorb most of my books. And I was so disappointed that I still haven't listened to it in David Goggins' book. Because some other guy whose voice is not appealing either. Like, I've listened to a lot of audiobooks, but this guy's voice is just like, it's hard to get into it. And David Goggins is so powerful.
Right.
And so, like, when it's your story, it's like, it's easier to get excited and tell it. So I would definitely say narrate your own book. Just from my personal beliefs and the books I've listened to, like, Grant Cardone narrates all his. And, like, when I listen to these guys, because sometimes they'll throw in, you know, little story or interject little tidbits into the book that, you know, might not have been in the actual paperback or hardcover, you know, that is in their audio when they're telling a story.
Yeah, that's good. That's something. And even, you know, the book itself, we talked about the transformation to a real estate investor, you know.
Yeah.
Even writing a book, you know, after we hit the last period, that's where all the work starts, right?
Right. Yeah, now's the heavy lifting.
Yeah. And my brother helped out a lot. My brother's really talented with all the cover design, even helped me edit it.
Okay. And now, older or younger brother?
Younger.
Okay.
Yeah, he's 7 years younger. He's over in St. Augustine, Florida.
Yeah.
He's actually in Wales at the moment on vacation.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I saw the preface. You gave a lot of love to the family and your wife and everything. So, you know, anything we didn't talk about that you want to cover before we end?
No, I think we did a pretty good job. I appreciate you having me on again.
Yeah, man. My first time, like, you know, launching a book on the show.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, you know, I'm excited for that. Randy Millette. And did you say Millette or Millette?
I'll accept either, as long as it's not Millette.
How do you say it?
I say Millette.
Millette. Randy Millette. I want to say it the way you say it, because just like my last name, people say it all different ways. So Randy Millette, for such a time as this, amazing book for anyone looking to get into real estate investing, and it goes deeper too, all the way into your faith, you know, the mindset, the discipline, so many things that really carried you through this journey, and I think those are what's going to lead you to, I mean, I can't wait till you got 100, 200, 300 units, and we're talking in a few years. And
that's awesome.
You know, you're the next Grant Cardone out of Louisiana. Grant's a Louisiana
boy. Well, yeah. If you can call it Louisiana. Lake Charles.
Yeah. It's still on that border.
It's West Texas. East Texas.
So, yeah, that'll be good. And maybe y'all could have a competition one day. If you could be competing against him, that'd be a good place to be.
He looks like a fierce competitor.
If you're counting your doors by the thousands instead of the hundreds, life's pretty good. You've done a damn good job.
Well, thanks again, Brandon. I really appreciate you having me on.
Oh, man, it's my pleasure. I thank all you guys every week for listening. Please go out and get the book. Support my man Randy here. It is absolutely worth the read, and it's a short read. It's a short book. It's not, you know, one that's going to take you a long time to read, and it's a very enjoyable read. So, and it can make you guys really a lot of money in real estate, and again, give you some insight behind the scenes, what it took from going from no background in real estate to buying a 10-unit apartment complex, and now my man is under contract for another 40, possibly 90 units. So it's going to be a hell of a first year in the business. You might beat the Kwok brothers. They did 75. If you go 100, you might have to.
That's basically their mission statement. That's what they strive for. So they want to push their students into
be better than they were. Yeah. Absolutely. So kudos to what they've taught you.